You're listening to Charlotte Real Estate Talk with Pridemore Properties.
We know a hungry child doesn't focus as well in school, and that makes learning even tougher. We take it for granted that here in America, if a kid can't afford a school lunch, they can get help buying a warm meal during the day. We probably also know that's not always true on the rest of the globe. Charlotte lawyer Rebecca Wofford saw that firsthand in 2011 when she took law school students on a trip to Tanzania to study public education in developing countries. The kids were hungry, and the headmaster there asked Wofford if there was anything she could do to help. From there, the Lunch Project was born, and its executive director, Tricia Sistrunk, joins us now on the Charlotte Real Estate Talk podcast. I'm DC Lucchese, in for the vacationing Scott Pridemore, here with Mike Hagee.
Well, Tricia, we're excited that you're here today talking about the Lunch Project. You're doing great work and really an interesting place geographically and the work you're doing here locally and how that spreads to Tanzania.
Yes.
Can you share a little bit about how, if you reverse engineer going back to the very inception of the Lunch Project, how did it get started and what was the, you know, the main premise behind it? Was it kids were hungry and ask anything to do with help? And then from there, what happened? How did that come to formate?
Well, thank you all for having me here to tell you about the Lunch Project. So as you said, the Lunch Project was actually born when Rebecca Wofford visited. She was working for the Charlotte School of Law at the time, and she took some law school students there to study Millennium Development Goals, one of them being education for all. And so in Tanzania, they were just kind of starting to, the government was starting to provide schools, and they wanted everyone to go to school, which wasn't happening. But they had very limited resources. So they provided a building, essentially, a building that had no electricity, no running water, and some teachers. And so these students, you know, where we're working right now is in what's called the Maasai community. And the Maasai are a tribe there in a rural part of Tanzania, right outside of Arusha, Tanzania. And when Rebecca visited that school, they said one of the biggest issues was that kids weren't coming to school because it really wasn't worth it for them to travel the 3 to 6 miles that they were walking to school. It was, you know, the parents would rather have them working at home and going to the market, going to get water for the family to a local well. And he said, I think we could change that if we were able to provide lunch at school. And so Rebecca came back and couldn't stop thinking about that and just, you know, kind of put a plan together and enlisted some help. And here we are. Since it was started in 2011, here we are now. It started at one school serving lunch 2 days a week, and now we're in 5 schools serving lunch 5 days a week.
So. Oh, wow. In that same rural area?
Yes, same rural area. So it's over 4,000 students now that are getting a hot meal every day.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is. And I think what is unique, so, you know, it's not just your typical feeding program. I think a lot of times in America, we think of shipping food in or, you know, it was real important that we worked with the community and that we, you know, it's their community run lunch program. It's not us shipping food in. We infuse money really into their local economy.
That's pretty cool. And so does that help the local farmers grow crops that are needed to make the lunches and they're making the lunches there on site?
Exactly. So it's, you know, we ask them, what would you do if you were to run your own lunch program? We're not experts. We're not going to come in and tell you how to do it. We felt it was important to be culturally respectful. And so they told us it was common for them to eat what's called an uji porridge. And it's corn flour, a little bit of sugar. We have ground nuts and milk. And they boil that over an open, like, campfire. The students will bring wood, logs, and water from a local well. We hire some local parents, mainly mamas. We call them mamas, the women in the community. But they have to have students at the school. We'll hire them for each school. And then we source the ingredients from local farmers. Right now we're employing or we're purchasing from about 52 local farmers and employing 24 mamas. So these are women who never had any source of income. And so you're really uplifting the whole community.
Yeah, I love that. Infusion in the community, but from you know, an economic standpoint, you're creating jobs locally.
Right.
I think it's a huge piece of distinction. What you just said, you're not just shipping a pack of food in a pouch that could be cooked there. You're getting feedback from the community and finding out what their needs are. And then you created a program specific to their local needs. And then you're creating jobs to see that through.
Right.
That's pretty comprehensive.
Right. It is, but yet it's also so simple. I mean, it's actually, in a way, easier. I consider it an investment. When I talk to donors and other groups, I consider it an investment in this community. It's not a charity. You know, we're actually investing. And what you get in return is that you're uplifting a community and you're educating another generation. So right now, you know, 41% of the Tanzanian population still lives in what's considered extreme poverty, which is less than $1.90 a day, earning less than $1.90 a day. And, you know, as a global citizen, we should be concerned about that. So I think education is the key to ending poverty. And this is one tool, one very important tool to getting those students educated, is providing a meal. So what we found when we provide a meal is attendance goes up from, 40, 50%. We're now 80, 90th percentile. Mm-hmm. Then when you get them into school, you get their attention. They have the fuel they need to get through the day, and test scores start to go up.
Right.
And so it's going to take generations to change, but you know, it is important that we care.
It's powerful. You just addressed the why, I think, which is kind of my, you know, why I do it this way versus another way. I think you eloquently answered that. I'm curious, Tricia, how did you come to be involved with the Lunch Project? What was your why that led you here?
Well, so I was friends with the founder. So Rebecca and I went to law school together. And, you know, from the beginning, I remember when she first came back from her trip and began talking about it. And I was on the founding board. So I was one of the board of directors. Rebecca did go back to practicing law after 5 years of being the executive director. And the board eventually asked me if I would come on and become the executive director. And I did. I took a chance and... you know, I do have a passion for it. I've been to Tanzania several times. Rebecca and I went twice together, and then I just got back in September. And it's, you know, once you go over there, you can't turn away, I guess. It changes your life. So we're trying to create that connection also with students here. You know, I've told my children about it. Rebecca told her children, and we actually have a presentation that we do in local schools. To kind of create a connection. We're not trying to create pity. I think it's a fine line. You could create pity, you know, the Sally Struthers type.
Get Sarah McLachlan singing a theme song for you there.
Exactly. I think, you know, so it is a fine line, but we have a great kind of uplifting presentation that we do for local elementary school children that teaches them about the Maasai culture and teaches them cultural differences and why we should be respectful, why they might carry things on their head and why that works in their community versus carrying or having a grocery cart or carrying things on their back. So, you know, all of that, just part of that, the reason we have that program is just to create a connection and empower them to help us create change in the world.
I'm curious, do you have a local presence in Tanzania where beyond the moms that you're employing, I think someone would say, you know, if I donate to a great cause that is investing in this community and it's very hyper-local, but is spreading goodwill at this point, 5 schools, which is incredible, 4,000 students impacted. I mean, that's, you're making a measurable impact. But how would someone say, these funds are appropriated and here's the way that we make sure that it's on the ground, is doing what the work that we set out to do?
Okay. Well, so we have... we do have some oversight. We have a Tanzanian coordinator who I haven't mentioned, Ernest. He's our lifeline over there. He's amazing. But Ernest, as we grew, we knew needed some reinforcements. And so we partnered recently with another organization that is locally based, but they have operations and an office in Tanzania. It's called the Foundation for Tomorrow. And it's amazing that there's two organizations in Charlotte that are both doing work in this specific part of Tanzania.
Wow.
But the fact that they had the infrastructure in place, you know, we've just basically hired them to help us be our managers on the ground over there and help manage Ernest. And that does create, you know, fiscal responsibility. And we're very open about exactly where the funds go. And it's really inexpensive. I mean, $100 a day feeds an entire school. It's enough to make the porridge for the entire. So that's another reason that the kids here
Holy
get
cow.
It.
My jaw just dropped. Yeah. Wow.
So at least, you know, most of our schools have between 800 or 1,000 students. And yes, essentially, I mean, again, this does sound like Sally Struthers, but 10 cents a meal. I mean, it's almost 10 cents a meal, but it's inexpensive for us to buy these ingredients. Another reason it's good to do it in their community, but that money is so powerful to them. I mean, it seems like nothing to us, but you know, we hear story after story from the mamas how this is their first income and now they can buy a goat or a chicken and provide for their family. Because of the steady income they're getting now.
Wow.
Now that is a lot. I mean, back me up just a little bit.
Yeah.
How do you end up over in Tanzania? There are needs all over the world. And how do you, you guys throw a dart at this thing? Did somebody give you a tip off? Like, hey, they got a lot of kids that need food in school.
Or, right.
Get me there.
Well, it just happened to be because that's where the founder went it was her first time to Africa, first time to Tanzania. And so it just happened to be where she landed. Right. There is need all over the world. And I, you know, to be honest, I get that question sometimes, you know, almost in a cynical way, though, like why there? There's plenty of need here.
Yeah.
Why help there? But, you know, what we think is there's plenty of money help to go around, too. Yeah. And I think the unique thing is that we are connecting kids here with their peers on the other side of the globe. We're showing in a big, broad way how, you know, we are a global community and how they can collect, they can see a dime on the ground or on the playground, or, you know, they earn a couple dollars from their, from the week from doing, you know, cutting grass or something like that. And they can make a difference in somebody's life. And that's an empowering feeling.
And what type of porridge did you say?
It's called uji.
Uji.
Uji?
Uji. Not Fuji. I thought originally. Uji. So is it E-U-G?
U-J-I.
U-J-I. Just want to clarify. Yes. I've never heard of goji berries.
But. And it's very common because they grow a lot of corn and soybeans. And so, and then we add the ground nuts and the dairy. They have so we purchase from different dairy farmers, corn farmers.
I'm just envisioning this open flame, right?
Yeah,
so you get the corn, you're providing the ground nuts and the dairy and the water from locally sourced wells. And then they've got the open campfire, massive cast iron pot.
That's it.
I'm just envisioning the smoke flaming, boiling water. And you put this mixture in there and you're stirring it, literally stirring it. And then the kids walk up and they've got a bowl. Or, I mean, what's the distribution look like?
So they bring cups. They bring cups from home and they line up. They form these lines behind the big buckets. You're right about that. And they spoon it, you know, dish it out and pour it in their cups. And they go out and they eat on the grounds of the school.
In the uji porridge, it sounds like it's got all the basic food groups there covered.
Yeah.
Your uji's got you covered.
It's got you covered. I mean, it's got
protein, carbs,
the dairy, the vitamins from the dairy. It really is efficient and nutritional. So, you know, there's not much else we could do. Like, it would be, you couldn't just have meat every day for them or things like that.
Right.
So, and honestly, that would be, we had suggested, I forget what it was. I want to say rice and beans, and the headmaster and all the schools and the parents said, no, that's too much. That's too special. That's a holiday meal. You know, porridge is what we would feed our children at home. So we're thankful to have that.
That's incredible. In a lot of places around the world, rice would be the staple that you would.
Right.
I'd almost, when you first started talking about the meals, I'm thinking, I wouldn't have expected uji porridge.
I know.
Would have probably rice.
But I think rice is less nutritional. Really. It's less nutritious. There's really no nutrients in rice alone. So it's actually a much more nutritional meal for the kids.
Wow. And kids that have full bellies that were hungry before, I mean, I'm thinking about when I'm hungry, I can't focus. If you're a child, you're trying to learn something, grasp concepts and learn.
Yeah.
You're helping with the education in such an indirect way, in such an incentive-based way that parents want to send their kids because they recognize that, well, it's for a good, but really they're getting them fed.
Right.
And then the byproduct of that is more educated. To your point, it takes generations to break that cycle of poverty.
Yes.
But you've been at this now for several years and you've spread to you know, 4,000 students. Do you envision this continuing to spread in that same region, or how do you, is there any other programs that you're working on that have a good overlap?
Well, so right now, you know, we have been focused on this area. There's so much need. Honestly, we were approved to be in 60 schools in that area. So just in that area alone, there's, And I think, you know, you could look at it one of two ways. We like to stay in that area because we do have the infrastructure. So the fear with international nonprofits is, I think, that lack of oversight. Yeah. And we feel comfortable with saying where your money is going and being and having that infrastructure in place. So I think right now, you know, I see us, there's so much need, and we have plenty of room to grow, and then we can continue to partner, find other organizations to partner with to bring in, you know, these schools have many other needs besides lunch. We try and stay focused ourselves on lunch because we do that well,
right?
But they need more teacher housing. They need, you know, a well, but it's very expensive to put wells in, and somebody has to maintain that well, and we're not experts in wells. So we just try and bring the resources, bring attention to these communities. And I think our partnership with the Foundation for Tomorrow, we've actually added, they do a teacher training program. So now we've added teacher training to these schools thanks to our partnership with them. So if we can find more organizations to partner with and bring more resources.
That's phenomenal. And even, I mean, we haven't even addressed the public health is a huge piece of that. Mm-hmm. But even from vaccines and polio, and I mean, all these things you think about in typically poverty areas,
yes.
And addressing the food piece alone, you hit kind of the basic need, beyond shelter. And it sounds like that's also another need.
Food and water. I think if anybody knows anybody at Charity Water, I'd love for them to come in and Charity Water is another huge nonprofit, and they build wells all over the world. And so if we can get them to come into our area,
we will tag them in this podcast. Yeah, Charity Wells. We need some help.
Yes,
absolutely.
No, I know it hasn't, like you said, generations before you'll see, you know, long lasting change.
Right.
But been in the space for a couple of years now. Have you experienced or heard about any success stories of, you know, somebody coming through, you know, a school program, you know, with the lunch project, you know, on the ground, and how they've gone on to do whatever it is that they may not have had the chance to do without your help?
Well, I think right now, our best metric is the attendance and the enrollment and how drastically that's going up. We have seen test scores. The children that have had lunch, we just had the first graduates from primary school that had lunch all 7 years while they were there. And I just received word from Ernest, our local coordinator, that at one of the schools, they got their test scores back. They take this, basically, it's called the Standard 7, and they take this test, and that is it. They take it, and if they pass it, they go on to secondary school. If they fail it, they don't. So it's a high pressure.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
82 out of 85 students that took it this last round passed.
Which
is incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, incredible. So, and the teachers, you know, I guess you can't say it's directly related to food, but all the teachers, all the headmasters say, yes, it's directly related to food because there's nothing else that's changed in these schools in the last few years, you know, but kids are coming to school. They have the energy to learn. And like you said, their parents, that's an incentive. I mean, they're no longer saying, no, I'd rather you go to market. No, you're going to get fed at school. You're going to go to school.
Right. You're going to go to school and you're getting a 96% pass rate.
Yeah.
I mean, that
look at you, math magician.
I just did that on a calculator
nice
so you know. But, you know, mental math.
Well, you know, who said that? Half a life is showing up, right?
There is that.
And if you can get him to show up, then.
I am really excited that you're on our podcast today. And really, I'm thinking, how can people get involved? How can everyday people, our audience, our listeners, other organizations, where do they start?
Well, so we have a website, www.thelunchproject.org. We've just overhauled that website, actually, to make it more interactive and fundraising friendly. The reality is, you know, we need money to do what we do, but we do offer to local community groups, local schools, our presentation where we could come in or businesses. We actually did on a bring your kid to work day at a local business. We came in and did our presentation to their children, and their children ended up writing letters to the students in Tanzania. We usually have a group going once a year. So, but yes, they can get the presentation. We have online educational materials that will connect them to the Maasai culture and teach them empathy by using our lunch program as a model. And, you know, it's really user-friendly, but they can email us at info@thelunchproject or go to our website, and it's pretty self-explanatory.
I have a question on the empathy piece before we wrap up. The empathy education that you're doing and the work around that, not to be confused with sympathy.
Right, right.
Which was we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But empathy, really understanding and putting yourself in one's shoes. And how do you teach that to the kids?
Well, I think, you know, as you said, we're not trying to create pity, but we do go through and we show them kind of the day in the life of a Maasai in a positive way, just talking about it's different, but not bad. And we talk about the difference between sympathy and empathy and feeling sorry for someone or versus putting yourself in their shoes. And I think for all of us, children at any age, you know, adults, we can all empathize with what it feels like to not have a meal during the day and try and focus and learn. And that's just an easy thing for kids to catch on to and for them to say, I can make a difference. I can buy a lunch for a kid. No matter what your socioeconomic status is in the city, you know, we do our presentation in Title I schools. We do them in private schools. They all need empathy, right? So I think even a kid that maybe he's had a free lunch, he can see a dime or and they can collect change. You know, the most impactful donation I got was from a school, from a Title I school, and it was a Ziploc bag of change.
That is awesome.
And they were so proud of themselves because they, you know, they counted up and realized how many lunches they purchased. So I think that's how we create empathy.
I just got teary-eyed a little bit. That's, I mean, just a visual of that, of a Ziploc bag full of dimes.
Yeah.
That's super cool. I love it.
That's pretty cool.
Yes.
You guys are doing very special work.
Thank you.
Trisha Sistrunk with The Lunch Project, thank you so much for joining us on today
thank you.
Charlotte Real Estate Podcast. I'm with DC filling in for Scott Pridemore. I'm Mike Hege for another edition of Charlotte Real Estate Talk Podcast.
Listen, download our podcast, or find out more about Charlotte Real Estate at pridemoreproperties.com.